The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to XYZ, the CNC podcast that where we sometimes talk about CNC, right, Craig?
Sometimes. Yeah, it's not unheard of for us to, at least.
Yeah, seriously. How the fuck are you, mate?
I'm good. We've been in a bit of a panic this week because the whole virus situation has got out of hand again, and shops are running out of stuff to food and toilet paper and all the usual stuff. All, you know, the usual idiots are out hoarding. It is what it is, unfortunately. But I'm good. Good spirits.
So you've been out there hoarding.
I have full on sort of zombie apocalypse with the mask and the hat and, you know, the big zombie slayer knife, you know, fully out there. But good spirits apart from that, I still really haven't got into work mode yet. I'm slowly grinding myself back into it, but I don't know. I find it every year. It's the time of the year where it's cold as well, and my shop is freezing, and it's like, slowly does it. That's what I say.
I can't deal with that. I need climate control. All of my previous workshops have been like way too hot. All my machinery produces like a bunch of heat. So this year is the first year I didn't like sweat to death in the workshop.
Yeah. Jeez. Chance would be a fine thing. It's either way too cold here or way too hot, and there's no happy medium here in my shop, unfortunately. I have to leave the even heat door open, you know, just to get a bit of heat in and burn through cash as it's just sort of eating the electricity.
Yeah, so I'm feeling pretty tired right now, and the reason for that is the same kind of thing at my house, actually. So we live in an apartment building that's from, like, the 70s, and when they turn the heat on, you get the heat. There's no thermostat in our apartment.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, like middle of winter, we have to have the windows open because it's too hot.
Wow.
Yeah, and if it gets warm outside, so right now it's kind of hovering around zero, it's not cold enough to stop the heat from cooking us.
Oh, geez.
So, yeah.
That's a dream for me. We're in a 500-600-year-old house, and we're heated primarily by burning wood. So it's a lot of work to keep this house warm.
It's just crazy to me. Like, I don't know. These guys are just wasting money, you know. I don't understand why they anyway.
Shall we try and talk about CNCs
I guess so, yeah.
It's a new year, 2021. My year is hopefully going to be full of a lot more CNC, and as I change the way I'm doing things.
Did you get your machine yet?
Don't be silly. In fact, I've cancelled it this morning. I sent an email this morning. They haven't responded. Basically saying, I haven't received it yet. You're way past when you said it would be shipped. So I'd like to cancel the order. So it'd be interesting to see what they say. Because I've got my eye on something else, which we'll talk about later. But first of all, let's talk about the video that you put online yesterday. You put a YouTube video up.
Oh, yes, I did.
First in a while. And the big question is, and I put it as a comment on YouTube, why do you have meat tattooed across your chest? What's...
Because I'm a meat popsicle. I already told you.
Is that what it says?
Yeah. I am a meat popsicle. I love Bruce Willis, so I had to get that tattooed across my chest. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. I thought you were joking, but you are serious. Wow.
No, I'm not. Well, or am I? I don't know.
The mystery continues. Yeah. So, what have you been up to this week?
This week, it's been I'm in dependency hell at the moment. So, as a programmer, you know what that means.
Yes.
Where one thing depends on another, and that depends on something else, and then 30 things down the chain. Did you ever watch Malcolm in the Middle, the TV show?
That's with Walter White playing the Family Guy, isn't it?
Yeah,
I saw one or two of them.
His character name in that is called Hal, and there's an amazing video. If you look on YouTube and type in like Hal fixes a light bulb, so he goes into the house and the light bulb's out, and he's like, oh, and then he looks in the cupboard to get a light bulb, and the shelf is fucked. So he like goes to get a screwdriver to fix the shelf, and then the drawer is squeaky. And then he goes to the hardware store or tries to, and his car is not running. And his wife comes home and is like, can you fix the light bulb? And he's like, under the car. And he's like, what does it look like I'm doing? It's like that at the moment a little bit.
So what's broken? What's the issue?
Oh, no, nothing's broken. I'm just, buying steel. I'm buying all sorts of things. And then I'm actually looking at a new project, which I teased on the Instagram account, which is a small tool-changing spindle. So I've been trying to think about, in terms of building a small CNC machine, what's the bit that's most lacking? And honestly, it's spindles. Like, you can buy servos and steppers and ball screws and rails and, whatever you want. But if you want a small spindle, you've got very, very few options. And the ones that are out there are very expensive.
Yeah, and I've seen people rig in sort of, water pumps to them to keep them cool, all that kind of stuff.
That's fine. But if you want a spindle that doesn't change tools, you've got tons of options. It's fine. Mm. No problems at all. But if you want a spindle that changes tools, the options, the cheapest option from China, from like an unknown builder, starts at like $2,500 US.
Wow. And that's the cheapest.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. So I'm kind of like looking into that, seeing whether that's something I can do something about. But that, before I start prototyping that, I need a lathe. And I don't have a lathe.
Right. That old chestnut. Eh? Yeah. Well, I need this lathe now. I need it.
Yeah, seriously.
You need to buy a $5,000 lathe to make a potentially a $2,000 tool.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy a $5,000 lathe, but I'm tempted. Yeah, like I've owned a couple of lathes in the past, but they were both like Chinese imports. One little tiny mini lathe, and then one quote unquote good lathe that, oh my God, that thing sucked. Now I'm looking at like vintage machinery.
Nice. Yeah. Big heavy stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And my workshop is small and I don't have a forklift, so yeah, it's kind of, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. I'm looking through the notes here and I can see you've made a note about the Boston Dynamics dance video. So I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to click on it now. We're going to do a live reaction review of this video.
Oh, wow. We've become the worst.
It's like those really bad YouTube channels, reaction videos. Yeah. But, all I know about Boston Dynamics is that they make these crazy dogs, don't they? These robotic dogs.
They do. But if that's the last thing you saw, then you're in for a surprise.
Let's have a look. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, okay. It's very human-like.
Yeah, creepily so.
Okay, I'm going to put this link in the show notes, by the way, because people might just think, what's going on?
Yeah, so it's literally a dance video of these robots, and it is amazing how fluid they have gotten these things to move. It's really very, very cool. In fact, I saw this video, and then like a day later, Mike sent me the link, and he was like, is this real?
It's if you haven't seen the video yet, it's a robot, very human-like, and it's dancing to one of the songs from Dirty Dancing, that Do You Love Me? Do You Love Me? That one. and you're right, it's very, very fluid, and wow, it's just the balance and that kind of thing on that. That's incredible.
Yeah, so incredible. Huge progress. soon these robots will be killing you.
Quite possibly in a Terminator style, yeah. I said that what I know about Boston Dynamics are those dogs, those sort of robo dogs that they did,
right.
And that always reminds me then of the Black Mirror episode. Did you see that one with the robotic dogs?
You know what, man? I can't watch Black Mirror. It's too depressing.
I love them, and I was gutted there wasn't one, because normally it's around about New Year they release the new season of Black Mirror, but this year they did this crazy. It wasn't Black Mirror, but it was by Charlie Brooker, and it was like a review of the year.
Right.
And it was terrible. It was, yeah. The first 10 minutes were funny, but they kept the egg in the same joke over and over and over again. It wasn't the best.
Gotcha.
But yeah, in Black Mirror, so these dogs are, terrifying, basically. They hunt people down, and it's very Terminator, very Terminator. But yeah. That's a big progression into this. What is very, I say, very, very human. It's moving so well. It moves better. I say human. Certainly moves better than me.
Yeah, me too, man. Yeah. I'm not a dancer, but those robots are.
Yeah.
See, they're already taking our jobs. Fuck.
Do you think they are programmed, or do you think they're remote, or do you think there's somebody in a suit actually doing that dance and it's mimicking the suit? What do you think is going on?
Suit is an interesting idea. I mean, yeah, it's either programming or the suit. It could be the suit.
They got Patrick Swayze the other side of the other side of the wall there doing his move.
Yeah, because I mean, they definitely program a lot of them previously, but I imagine that programming this would be like, you know, you get the intern for 6 months programming these damn robots to dance, you know.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering, how smart it is, whether it's just performing a programmed routine, or whether it's using sensors to judge the distance from the wall, distance to the floor, and all that. You know, how smart is it? It looks impressive.
It's a combo of both for sure, because I know that with the balancing, like, you know, those robots are standing up, they're balancing, they can't do that in a programmed fashion. They have to do that like in real time while executing the programmed moves. So like,
yeah. Right, yeah. So you could imagine, like, I mean, you've seen rough versions of like an exoskeleton. You know, let somebody they lose the ability to walk, and being able to strap one of these things on, and that's pretty awesome.
Whenever I picture an exoskeleton in my mind, I'm trying to remember what TV show it was from, but it's like they put this guy in the exoskeleton, and he's like, "All right, test number one," and then the exoskeleton just like bends him backwards. Yeah, every joint just suddenly goes backwards.
Snap. Yeah. Ow. Ouch. So we've had, you have been particularly very active on Instagram, on our xyz.cnc Instagram account.
We've
had lots of.
Well,
yeah, let's shitpost in.
Yeah.
We've had questions. We've had lots of sort of feedback from you guys as well, which is really nice. But I want to talk about the first one. So Scott, I think it's Scott Hoadley.
Mm-hmm.
He says, and he's looking for advice, and it certainly won't be coming from me. This will be coming from you. he's going to buy a mini mill to start a hobby business that will likely include knife making. So he wants to know how to get started with hard milling. And he's asked for tool recommendations, speeds, with his 6,000 RPM spindle. Will that be fast enough? So basically what Scott is saying is, will you do all the research for him? You spend 3 years mastering your craft and give him the... I'm only joking, Scott. That's partly why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, first of all, like, that's a pretty baller move, Scott. Like, I'm not sure if he's run a CNC machine at all previously. I don't know. I hope so. But yeah, the Haas mini mill is that's not the Chinese CNC router. But the answer is yes. Like, pretty much any milling machine, like a real mill, will hard mill. It doesn't really matter what the spindle speed is. You can actually hard mill at very low spindle speeds if you need to. And so I basically divide my hard milling. Actually, let's go back for a minute.
Yeah, explain the hard milling, what hard milling is.
Exactly.
You actually did very well in your... I sound so condescending. You did very well. But in your YouTube video this week, you talk about hard milling and how it's milling hardened steels, basically.
Yeah, so it's basically machining metals that are already hardened. So you know, that could be a stainless steel, that could be a carbon steel. You know, in some cases it could be like an Inconel or a titanium, but in most cases when people are talking about hard milling, they're talking about tool steels, because you're making molds, or you're, you know, in my case, you're making knives. And yeah, it's kind of like a dark art. You know, people speak about it in hushed tones behind closed doors, because like it makes some people a lot of money, right? Like if you're making injection molds, then like getting the right hard milling parameters will let you machine a mold after it's been hardened, and then you don't have to worry about warping, and you know, you can get like mirror finishes if you got the right machine, and it's pretty crazy stuff. It's really awesome. And yeah, like a lot of machinists have never done it, which means that there's not a ton of info. Like there's some, but not a ton of info floating around about it. And it can take a bit of getting used to. It's not the same as machining steel soft. You have to do things quite differently. And one of the...
So does it require a far more sort of rigid machine?
No. You can really just dial it back. You know, like right. My CNC mills are Fidal VMCs, and they are not considered the most rigid machine ever. Not right. by any standard. And they do just fine. You know, like when I'm doing my roughing, so like removing the initial material on my blades, I'm hard milling. And that process is so quiet that you really can't even hear it over the machine itself.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's pretty amazing when you get it dialed in. So I do two different types of hard milling. I do what's kind of call like a high feed hard milling, which is where you have a very small depth of cut, but you are taking quite a wide cut. So like, you know, the width of the tool or half the width of the tool. And then you're taking quite a large chip load. So you're taking a large amount of material for every tooth on the cutter, for every flute. So there are tools that are called like high feed mills, but you can also emulate that if you have a tool that has a large corner radius. And what it does is it puts most of the force directly up into the spindle rather than trying to bend the tool sideways. Forces go up, and so that means that the material has nowhere to go because it's getting pushed down, and the spindle and the tool are going straight up. So it's a very strong configuration, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, the weakest point is obviously always going to be the tool.
Yeah.
So if the majority of the load is being taken on the spindle.
Yeah. And right. So tooling is really important for hard milling too. So like you can buy like crazy, you can spend like literally like $250 on a quarter inch end mill for hard milling, you know, if you're buying hard milling specific tools. But what I've found is that, you know, corner radiuses are great because hard milling will take a square corner off an end mill very, very quickly. And coatings are good. So like aluminum, titanium nitride or something like that on the tool really helps with the heat. Run the tools dry. You don't need any coolant or anything, which is awesome. And then as many flutes as you can get. So right now I'm using a 6-flute tool. And the reason that's important is because every time you add a flute, so there's an area inside the flute called the gullet, which is like the kind of circular area where the chips can go into behind the cutting edge. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And as you add more flutes, the gullet gets smaller. And that actually means that the core of the end mill, so like the part in the middle that is solid, gets bigger. So if you were to have like a 100 flute end mill, it would basically be like a solid, you know, rod of tungsten carbide, which is very, very strong, right? So the more flutes, the better, particularly for me and for Scott, because we don't have like super high speed spindles. So I use 6-flute tools right now from Maritool. They actually added those specifically for me, and they're amazing. They're like $16 each or something. They're not expensive at all. And
these are just available commercially on their website.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll put a link to that. in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll add a link. One of the really cool things about Marital is that, like, every time I ask them for a special tool, they just add it as a stock item. So there's like a bunch of tooling on their website that I've kind of asked for that they've just kept up there. And so they've actually just recently added an 8-flute version for me. And I'm super excited about that. I haven't actually received any yet. I've just ordered them the other day, but they're coming.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm excited. So yeah, for the high feed milling, I do 2,500 RPM, 72 inches a minute. And that results in about a 1/5000th of an inch chip load. So load per flute with a 6-flute tool. And then I'm taking a 1/8 step over and only 2.5 thousandths depth of cut. So I was going to convert all of this into metric.
These measurements mean nothing to me. It's just like, it's like Arabic.
Yeah, I was going to convert them all into metric, and then I looked at all the things I was going to have to convert, and I was like,
Yeah. But like, I know a quarter inch roughly is about 6.35 mil. That's all I need to know, and I'm fine.
Yes, exactly. And then all of the other numbers are, you know, much less than a millimeter. You're taking a very small cut. It produces chips that are, it looks like sugar or salt or something. Very, very small.
Grains. Okay. Yeah.
And that's definitely what you want to be doing with hard milling. Like, you're never going to be like roughing out big chips with hard milling. It's just not what you should expect. It's always going to be little tiny, you know, dust.
So this is for bevels, I assume.
Yeah. So I do all of my bevels hard. But you can, you know, you can machine anything. And
so let's say you're cutting out the profile. What's the difference then? I assume it's going to be very different, because if you're milling profiles, you're using the sort of end of the tool. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're profiling using the side of the tool, I don't know how deep you'll plunge down, whether it's all in one cut or in multiple cuts.
Yeah, so I have done that in the past, and I took the full depth of cut, so it was a 5/32nd, so about 4 millimeters, full depth of cut. But then you're only coming across, like, your width of cut is only like 1/1000th or 2/1000ths. And you'll just move really, really fast. So yeah, it's like 1/10 of a millimeter, you know. And you'll move fast going around the profile and just, you know, chewing your way in. And again, it makes those very fine chips. And one of the cool things about hard milling is, once you start thinking about it, about materials that way, it can actually help you with some materials. So recently I've been starting to machine stainless steel, and machining it soft, it's like trying to machine bubble gum. It's horrible. It just sticks to everything, and it's really like, it just smears. It's not nice at all. And so I was like,
really? It's almost like a plastic.
Just brutal. And stainless steels are known for being like that. Like, everybody's like, oh God, you know, anything other than stainless, right? And I, just Mike and I were talking about this, and something in that conversation jogged me to think, like, oh, I wonder how hard this material is. And so I chucked it on my hardness tester, and I got like 5 Rockwell. It's like nothing. Whereas annealed tool steel, like annealed A2, is like 20 to 25 Rockwell. So I was like, okay, what happens if I harden this just a little bit? So I chucked it in my oven and brought it up to like 1500 Fahrenheit for, you know, 10 minutes, and then did an air quench, and that got it up to like 35 Rockwell. And all of a sudden it machines like butter, like no problem at all. And you know, I don't have to use coolant. I don't have to do anything. Like, all of my machining parameters for A2 suddenly work just fine. So yeah. And there are a ton of stainless steels that are actually like that. Like 17-4 is a precipitation hardening grade of stainless. And when that's soft, it sucks to machine. It's awful. I was helping a friend make some guitar parts quite a while ago. And yeah, it was really, really bad. But then you harden it to like 40 Rockwell, and all of a sudden it's beautiful. Like, beautiful surface finishes. Yeah. It just amazing. So yeah, hard milling is a really great tool to have in your arsenal, for sure.
So you're not doing that now. You're getting everything fully heat treated in a vacuum furnace. So you're now milling at what, sort of 60, 62, something like that?
Yes, 63-ish. I'm doing a combination these days. So I found that like machining the profile is much faster and easier if I do it soft. And there's no real benefit to doing it hard. And then I'm actually doing my heat treat in-house. And then I'm doing the bevels hard.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So I would like to go back to machining everything hard, but I have to work out like what the next process is that allows me to do that.
But that's a baller move from Scott.
Yeah, seriously.
Just going straight in with the Haas mini mill. I mean, what do they run at cost wise?
I think they're about 50k US.
Wow.
If I remember correctly. But you know, like if you're running
that cat again, my the show cat.
You know, if you're gonna run a business, then like. And you're, you know, planning on CNC machining knives or whatever, then, you know, having the right tool for the job makes sense. And
But I mean, would something like a Tormac, like they call it their personal CNC, mm-hmm. 440. I mean, they start around about $6,000, I think. But would that be adequate, do you think, for hardened steels?
I know that it is, actually. I have a friend in Malaysia who snacks. I'm not sure if you've seen him on Instagram. He makes these incredible folders that come apart and go together with no tools. They're just nuts. But he hard mills on his Tormac using the same tools that I use, actually. So we've had a few conversations about that, and he definitely had to adjust his parameters a bit. But he's been doing it quite successfully from what I've seen. So
nice.
Yeah, okay, I mean, one thing too. I mean, Scott, I don't know if you've already placed your order for the Haas, but if you have the space, I would personally go for a VF0 rather than a VF1 rather than a mini mill. Personally, you get more tools in the tool changer. It's a sturdier machine. You know, I think you'll grow into it a bit more. But the mini mills are awesome machines too. I have a friend in the States who has one, and he does incredible work on that. So, you know, just a thought.
We've also had a message from Brian House, and he's House Work on Instagram. He also has a show on the Makery Network as well, which is called Work For It. I don't know if you heard Brian. He's got like the voice for radio. It's got the perfect voice. But he says, "Hey guys, just want to let you know that I'm listening to all of your podcasts in a row, and I'm really enjoying it. I was a little bit skeptical about the premise of the show. Well, fuck you, Brian. If that's what you think. If you were skeptical, you didn't have trust in us or faith in us. Fuck you, Brian.
It's okay, Brian. I was skeptical too."
But he says, but yeah, it really does work. So just thought you guys would like to know. Happy New Year. Well, thank you, Brian. We love your show too. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and one of my buddies, Nick, started listening to the show the other day, and he said our accents are a bit much.
Really?
Yeah.
I've got a pretty neutral accent, and I don't think yours is too strong either.
Well, you know what? I've known Nick for a long time. I've got a lot of respect for the guy, so all I want to say is fuck you, Nick.
And if you're a listener who'd like to be told to fuck off, you can contact us at xyz.cnc.
We can have a list. You can become a patron or something, and then we'll tell you to fuck off. Yeah. No, actually, I'd love to get Nick on the show in the future because he and his brother. So if you haven't seen their Instagram, it's Frank Brothers Guitar Company, and they make the most beautiful guitars. And I don't even know how to say that. They started in the same workshop that I did, which was this shitty shared workshop in the basement of an old factory building that would flood every time it rained. And, you know, so there were lots of late nights of us working on stuff together and drinking excessively and so on. So they're great guys, and they do just the most amazing work with their guitars. And they are...
Yeah, luthiers, I assume.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Was it Frank Brothers, did you say?
Yes, Frank Brothers. And as I said, they do beautiful, beautiful work. And so, Craig, just before we started the show, you had your camera on for a second, and I saw a nice, what looked like a Les Paul behind you and an acoustic.
Yes, Yes. So I've got a few guitars in here, actually. But actually, the Les Paul is maybe quite relevant to the show, because when I first bought it, it had the automatic tuning pegs on it.
Oh, God, those fucking things, yeah.
I've taken them off because they're pretty bad. But it always amazed people. So the for those who don't tuner. Know... So for those who don't know, a tuner is like the peg at the top of a guitar. You turn that, and it turns a post, which will stretch the string to change pitch. And these had little motors on. So you literally just strum the guitar. It could tell by the frequency of the vibration whether they were in tune or not. So it didn't use microphones. It was just the vibration. And it would then automatically turn these pegs at the end of the guitar to tune the guitar. In theory, mm-hmm. that's what it's meant to do. Looks very, very impressive. And the first time people see it, they're like, wow, that's incredible. But yeah, they don't really tune that well. And it's once you play guitar, it's quicker just to do it yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is pretty cool.
If it worked, it'd be super handy. You know, you're on stage, you need to go from like a standard tuning to drop D or something. You press a little button and it retunes your guitar for you, but no.
No. Yeah, in practice, it doesn't really work that well.
And if I remember correctly, it sounds like hobby servos when it's tuning. It's like really scratchy.
Yeah. Do you know that there's little plastic blue servos you can buy for like Arduino stuff? Yeah. That it pretty much sounds like one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Not good.
So yeah, some of my background, you may not know, Craig, is the reason that I'm so interested in CNC is because I was working in a factory in Australia that made guitars for a little while.
Oh.
Okay. And I won't name them because they were shitheads. so I ended up getting fired from that job. And the reason was because the owner of the company, you know, he was like a self-taught manufacturing engineer. And I was hired into the job and was working, like doing hand assembly of acoustics and stuff, hand finishing. And a couple of weeks in, I think it was about 4 weeks in, he asked me like, oh, how are things going? And his buddy was the one that was teaching me, that was like running the finishing section. And this guy was really new as well. And I just said, it's going terribly. Like, he's telling me to do the wrong things and then blaming me for things going wrong when I do them wrong. Geez.
But it's his buddy that you're talking about.
Yeah. And he specifically said, I want to know the truth. I want to know how things are going. You know, and I told him, and then he fired me.
Oh, geez.
So whatever.
Shit. Yeah. You're right.
But, yeah, that place, they had this amazing 5-axis CNC router that was like 30 feet long. And the guitar bodies and stuff would get put on this thing. And, you know, so you'd start out with a solid block of wood for like an electric guitar. And then the tool heads would come in, and it had a tool changer built into the moving carriage of the CNC machine. It would come in and machine everything. And it'd come in with like really long auger style drill bits to do the like electronics holes that go in between the pickup cavity and the control cavity, you know, coming in from some crazy angle to drill the holes and stuff. It was very, very cool.
Wow. Well, I'm just looking at the Frank Brothers now on their website, and their guitars do look beautiful. Yeah. I suppose they're sort of Telecaster shaped, I suppose.
Oh, come on. They're not Telecaster.
But a bit more sort of angular on the horns. But
they've got their own style. Lovely. For sure.
Yeah, they're beautiful looking guitars and lovely colors they've got too.
Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah, so I'd love to have probably Nick on the show in a little while, just because they're going through the process of looking at some new CNC machines at the moment. So
yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, that'd be really cool. Let's get on it. Let's get guests. Right. Yeah. Okay, we've had another question from CH_works, again on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And he says, what are your thoughts on a Harbor Freight mini mill with a CNC conversion kit? They're about $1,400. It seems like a cost-effective starting point for a knife maker for a lot of small projects. Now, I'm assuming the Harbor Freight mini mill, I assume it's like one of those those Chinese mini mills that they're rebranded a million ways.
Yes.
Lots of companies use the same thing.
Yeah, so you can
like get SX5s or something like that, they call them.
Yeah, exactly. It's an X2 in this case. Yeah, you can get from Harbor Freight, Grizzly, Mini Mark, or Micro Mark, King Canada, like all sorts of places. I love this question, because this is kind of how I got started with knife making a bit, right? Like I bought a King Canada mini mill, so it's the equivalent of a Grizzly GO704 or an X2. Mm. And I was using it by hand to make stuff, you know. And yeah, you know, I was thinking, like, I'm going to do a CNC conversion of this thing.
Could that, I mean, even if you're not converting to CNC and you're using by hand, could the bevel still be cut anyway, doing it manually? Because once you've dialed in the angles and you're just doing that sort of lateral movement.
Yeah, the problem is the angles aren't a straight, like the bevels aren't a straight line. Right, it rolls off towards
obviously the tip. Yes, yeah, I'm being a fool there, obviously. Yeah. Believe it or not, I'm a knife maker.
Who can tell?
Believe it or not. There'd be no distal taper, and you'd have to, you need to step it down as you go. I got you, yes, yeah, of course.
So yeah, the answer is probably no, but you know, I used it for doing for drilling holes and for cutting coils and for doing, you know, various bits of knife making. And they're okay. Like, if you've got nothing else, they're not bad. The spindle's noisy and a bit, you know, it tended to really jump around in the cut and wanted to, you know, not be where you want it to be.
I would imagine they're very light. I'd imagine there's not much of a heft behind them to sort of hold their ground.
Yeah, the problem is when you say light, like, they weigh, like, 200 pounds or something. Like, they're not.
Mm.
Then, you know, so by like big machine standards, yes, they're ridiculously light. I think part of the issue is that they don't use their mass well. So they're
okay.
You know, for the purpose of being a CNC, so that's kind of what we would call a C-frame milling machine, where you have the base and the table moves in X and Y on the bottom, and then you have a vertical column that the spindle travels up and down. Right. So that's called a C-frame machine. And my CNC machines are actually the same design. Just with, you know, the column on my machine is a steel tube that's like 2 feet across with like 2-inch thick walls. Right. So beefy. But in terms of like rigidity, that's like the least efficient design.
So it's effectively like a beefed up drill press.
Yes.
That sort of shape and that the same movement with the table moving X and Y.
Yeah. And that design works when your machine is 5,000 pounds or 10,000 pounds. Like, it does work.
Mm.
But if you want a small, relatively light machine that's going to be rigid, it's not a great choice. You know, it's something like the Nomad mill or the Bantam mill, like, so they call that like a dual column or a bridge style machine, where you have the spindle moving in X side to side and then up and down, and then the table has its own kind of flat plate, and then you have two supporting elements on the left and right. That design is a lot more rigid for the weight, if that makes sense.
Got you. Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I will say, so he sent a link, CH Work sent a link to a website called heavymetalcnc.com.
I'm just looking at that now, where, yeah, basically they've taken one of these Grizzly machines and they've sort of retrofitted this CNC controller and the stepper motors and so on.
Yeah, and so it's a full conversion kit with like the ball screws and motor mounts and all that kind of stuff. And when I was looking at converting a mill, like, that stuff I couldn't find that. You know, and that was, you know, so that was like 10 years ago, I guess. And that didn't exist as far as I could find. But this one, this kit on the Heavy Metal CNC website looks really nice. Like, it all looks really well machined. It looks well thought out. So, I mean, it definitely looks like it would work. I looked on the internet to try and find some videos of like X2 size mills machining, specifically with this kit. And I really couldn't find anything. They don't have like a demo video on their website, which is a bit rough. You know what? Like, it might work, but I know a couple of people that own machines like this, and they just find them very, very frustrating. You know, if you build a fixture that's going to mount in one place on your machine, and you come in, you turn your machine off, and then you come in the next day and you expect it to come back to the exact same spot on that fixture, you might be a bit disappointed. You know, you might be having to like dial in that fixture every single day, which would be painful, to say the least. But, you know, if you want a hobby machine and you're willing to spend a bunch of time playing around with the machine, then yeah, it might be an option.
It's an option.
Yeah. The problem is, like, if you really want a small machine that you could throw in your garage and you're going to rely on it day to day to make parts and make money, then, you know, you don't want a machine that's a project, really. And at that point, you're basically looking at like a Tormach or a Haas.
Yeah.
You know, those are.
Yes. Yeah, so you're talking $7,000-$8,000 minimum, which would be for the Tormachs and obviously a lot more than for the Haas.
Right, yeah. And to be clear, like, that's for a Tormach with no tool changer. Like, that's $7,000 or $8,000. That's for a Tormach with no tool changer, no enclosure. Yeah. You know, it doesn't come with a computer to control it. Like, it's still a bit of a project. And if you want to make money off a CNC machine, not having a tool changer is going to hamstring you. It's going to be a real issue.
I can see what you're doing. You're setting people up ready to purchase this tool changer of yours. We know exactly what you're doing.
So to be clear, like, if I do make this tool changing spindle, I'm not going to be like trying to make a bunch of money off it. It's going to be one of those things where I'm really pleased with my early videos because it seemed like they had an impact on helping people get into knife making, right?
Without a doubt.
And so, I want to have the same kind of impact in the, like, you know, garage CNC kind of crowd, right? And I think that introducing an inexpensive tool changing spindle would be the biggest impact I could have. Right. So that's kind of, I have projects this year that, like, I want to do because they're fun. And I have projects that I want to do because, you know, personal, like, business projects that are going to help make me money. And then there's going to be ones that where I want to try and make an impact. And that I think that's going to be the one where, like, I can make the biggest impact. So
that's how Jeff Bezos started. Just say he just wanted to make an impact on the way people shop.
Yeah.
Now it's an
$180 billion. Yeah, seriously. If I make $180 billion off spindles, Craig, I'll give you half.
Fair enough.
How's that been?
This takes us now. We've had basically two people sort of talking about the mills that they're buying or that they want. We do actually have a third as well. A third person has recommended a machine as well. But let's talk about my situation. So
it's all about you, Craig. God.
Well, it's all about, it needs to be about, well, I set up a whole podcast network just to talk about me.
Oh, yeah.
But, my situation is I want to be using a CNC for my knife handles, which are mainly going to be slabs of G10, which are sort of laminated G10s. There'll be multiple layers, that kind of thing. And we discussed in the past that the cheap sort of Chinese Sane Smart, I think it was 4030, was what I was originally going to have. Now cancelled that order, simply because I've seen a couple of videos online now as more and more people are getting in them, and they don't look the best. So I want to be milling, basically 2D milling, almost routering out these handle shapes. So I'm still thinking a Onefinity is the right machine to go for, because cost wise, I'm sure it's going to do the job.
How much is one of those? It would do the job
Shipped here, probably about $2,500.
Right, and that's with electronics and a controller and everything.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. You still use your laptop and link it up to a laptop, but it runs a web service. You can do it, you know, remotely as well. Mm. It does have a touchscreen interface as well. But they've got two. They've got the one which is predominantly made for sort of woodworkers, and one which they call the Machinist, which I think is pretty much the same machine,
it's just
a lot smaller. Yeah. So it's far more rigid. And yeah, I think it's 16 inch by 16 inch is the sort of work area. So more than big enough for what I need.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to press go on that. I think that's the machine to have. And I just want people to reassure me that maybe that's the way to go.
Right.
So if we've got any listeners who are in a similar situation to me, that they just used a CNC for their handle materials, which I know Toma at Florentine Kitchen Knives. He does, and he uses a Step CNC, and they're a German company. And there's also another one called Step Way, which is similar as well. They seem to be, as we've talked about before, they seem to be more CNC routers as opposed to mills, just the way they're set up. But I think it's going to do the job for G10 anyway.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. So, like, I saw kind of an amazing YouTube video the other day. I'll put a link in the show notes, but this guy is like, what's the, you know, cheapest way to CNC cut steel? And so he gets one of the little, I think it's a 1310 size Chinese machine.
I've got one of those here. Yeah. Right. It's a tiny little thing. Yeah.
So he gets the new version that has like the big aluminum plates for the side and so on. Mm. And, you know, does a bunch of work on it to try and get it cutting steel. And, like, I really admire that he tried. I think, again, the weak point was the spindle, because he's got one of those spindles where it's like a DC motor with an ER collet chuck bolted to the front of it.
Mine.
Yeah, and it's like the worst possible spindle. Like, that. just it's not designed as a spindle, you know? And he kind of got close. It's honestly, it's amazing to me that you can buy a machine like that now for like a couple of $100.
I think the one I've got is, and it's the same, it's the sort of the newer version, if you like, with the aluminium extrusion bed and the sides. I think I paid like $150 US for mine.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I have actually used it to cut out, you know, 6mm or 1/4 inch G10,
right.
And it will do it. It's just a very slow process, right. And I, you know, it's probably very hard wearing for this machine to do it.
Yeah.
It's vibrating like crazy, and so it will actually do it. So yeah, I've seen lots of videos of people sort of tuning these up and making them stronger, but like you said, it then becomes a project, and you're always going to be fixing something.
Yeah But I mean, you know, I think I said this in an early episode, like when I first got started, the only CNC that I could get was, you know, I think it was like $1,000 or $1,500 or something, and it, like for rails it used electrical conduit with skateboard bearings, you know. And the gantry supports, like the vertical parts of the gantry, were acrylic, like 1/4 inch acrylic, and it used a Dremel as a spindle. It was like the worst. I can't imagine managing to design a floppier CNC machine. Like this thing.
So, I mean, what was the purpose of that for maybe electrical circuit boards, that kind of thing? Would it work for that?
It was just like, you can have a CNC machine, you know, like, because it wasn't really a done thing at that time. You know, I was very excited to have a CNC machine.
Yeah.
And I had one, and it was terrible. But yeah, you know, so like just so the cost cutting in this thing to make it, you know, because at that point it wasn't like there was a ton of like inexpensive Chinese CNC parts on the market, right? So
yeah.
The lead screws were coupled to the stepper motors by short bits of transparent hose held on either side with a hose clamp. as a coupler, right?
You're not going to be hard milling on that.
No. You couldn't cut Swiss cheese on this thing. Like it was rubbish. But yeah, so it blows my mind now that you can get, you know, I mean, the little like 1310 style machines, whatever, they're not great machines, but they're CNC machines.
And they work. And I think for, you know, schools and things should be getting these things in, you know, and, you know, because
I think they're a bit too much of a fire hazard and a finger hazard for a school. You need a bit of an enclosure, possibly. Some safety switches and stuff, you know?
Yeah, but you know, for a learning tool, they're very cheap,
and
they will do the job of, you know, on a much smaller scale of what a bigger CNC machine would do. So yeah, I mean, there's plenty of options out there for people. You know, particularly in my situation now, where let's say my budget is sort of $3,000 US. Mm-hmm. If anybody has an idea of what they think would work better, maybe than one of the Onefinity machines, let me know. We are xyz.cnc on Instagram. And yeah, some recommendations, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Which takes us then onto another question. Well, not so much a question, but wanted us to be aware of something. So, Qvist Bladeworks, again on Instagram, Just wanted you to be aware of the Carbard 3D folks too. So Nomad 3 is a Bantam competitor. And we talked about Bantam tools last week, I think it was. Yeah. And they do this amazing little CNC, which is for specifically, I think that is for sort of aluminium prototyping. I think that's what they're aiming it at.
Yeah.
But he says this Nomad 3 is a very similar build and spindle speed at a more affordable and it's more available. By that, I'm not quite sure what he means by more available.
Maybe I think just less like they're in stock. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So have you seen these? What are they all about?
I have. Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. I've seen them for a while, and again, I'm kind of admiring them from a distance because I think it's really cool that little machines like this are available now. You know, when I was getting started, they weren't, as we talked about. And yeah, I mean, it looks good. They have a bit of a different philosophy in terms of work holding than the Bantam does. The Bantam is more kind of a traditional work holding. You have like T slots in the table and you can mount different stuff. Whereas the Nomad has like a flat plate with some holes in it. And then they have like little jigs and vices and stuff that mount straight to that hole pattern. They have one really interesting thing called the flip jig, which is it's like a hollow aluminum rectangle, and it's designed to hold material inside the rectangle. And then it has like locating bolts. So you machine from the top and then you flip it upside down and you machine from the bottom and you leave tabs. Oh. So you can get like a full 3D part, machine both sides. But they have like an off the shelf solution for that, which is really clever because I'm sure that there's tons of like little small parts that you want to machine and you know, want to do both sides and use tabs.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, it's very clever.
And I mean, if Carbide 3D are making it, I assume it's pretty, you know, tightly held into the software that they create as well. Sort of Carbide Create, and I think VCarve, and there's a few things they do. But I'm not sure what their sort of the 3D style of things go, because I know most of the software they do is for routering, really. So I'm not sure if they've got specific software now for this tool as well.
I don't know exactly. I know that I was watching a video of someone using it online, and he was using Meshcam, which is like a semi-automated kind of cam package for doing 3D machining. And he was machining like a little fan blade that went onto the spindle of the Nomad to blow chips away.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, clever idea. It seems to work. And yeah, he machined that in the flip jig using mesh cam for doing the toolpaths, and it seemed to work. No problems there.
What sort of shortfalls do you see in these machines? Because I mean, the price difference is huge compared to a big, more sort of industrial machine. Mm-hmm. What are the shortcomings do you think of these machines?
The biggest one that I see consistently is that the spindles don't allow you to insert tools into the collet as deeply as you should. So and people seem to love using like really long tools, you know, tools with like an inch of flute when they're only cutting like, you know, an eighth of an inch deep or something. So like that combined with the tool already sticking out of the collet by like an inch too much, you're ending up putting a lot more load on the spindle than it would be if you were using like a really short tool, you know?
Yeah.
So I did actually reach out to the Bantam guys and I just said like, oh, you know, in a bunch of your videos, it seems like the tool's sticking out a huge amount. Is that because you can't get it in any further with the collet, with the spindle design? And it turns out that yes, that is the case, unfortunately. So
gotcha.
I think that's probably one of the bigger issues because like the way that a spindle works, you think about it like a lever. You know, the longer the tool, the longer the lever that you have acting on those spindle bearings. So
yeah,
if you take a popsicle stick and you hold it the full length and you try to break it in half, it's going to be super easy. But if you're trying to break a section that's only half an inch long, it's a lot more difficult.
Far more rigid, yeah.
So like shortening up your tools will make a huge, huge difference on how well the machine will perform, especially when you're talking about a small, relatively light machine. So yeah, I mean, if I was going to be running one of those machines, I would probably work out some way to trim the shanks of the tools. So you can actually use like a diamond abrasive bit on like a Dremel or something to cut the tools off,
cut them down a bit. Yeah,
Yeah, and so you don't want to cut the cutting end of the tool off. You want to buy a short flutes because you're not going to be able to make that work. But the back end of the tool, the shank, you know, if you shorten that up so that you've got like the least possible sticking out of the collet, it'll make a really big difference. And that's something to think about with your machine. And that's something that I think about with my machines too. You know, like when I'm hard milling, like I literally have only 3/8 of an inch. So like 10 millimeters of tool sticking out of the collet.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes complete sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've had even more questions, and I think what we should do is maybe roll these over onto next week because, it's really nice that people are listening and they're interacting with the show. But I mean, one of the questions we've got, which we'll talk about next week, and maybe we can have some people's opinions beforehand, is 3D printing. So 3D printing for production, whether people think 3D printed things are ready for production, whether they think the machines are available. Let us know what you think, and we can always bring that up next week when we talk about that. But yeah, and I think what we'll try and do is get a guest in, maybe if not next week, certainly the week after. And that could be quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good to me.
Cool. Good stuff. Well, I think that's a show. We've covered a hell of a lot there this week. And a lot of CNC stuff. Who'd have thought?
I know, right?
Who would have thought? So yeah, again, as a favor to myself, if you've got a recommendation on a machine that you think could work, generally for G10 machining, let me know. And also tag in these manufacturers, because they should be giving us free machines by now. We should be talking about using these machines, and we should be getting new machines in the post every day.
Oh god,
that would be lovely.
Give me free stuff.
That's why you start a podcast. Come on, that's why we all do it. But yeah, thank you all very much for listening. Hope you all have a better 2021 than, you know, I'm imagining your 2020 wasn't good. Maybe it was. I don't know. But let's all hope that we have a good 2021 anyway.
And yeah, fingers crossed, man.
And myself and the meat popsicle will speak to you next week.
Have a good week, guys.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network. Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.